The U.S. Congress, and this is an important story, has introduced a bill, H.R. 4051, that could impose sweeping sanctions on South African leaders for allegedly supporting terrorist organizations, aligning with Iran, and weaponizing international law against Israel. But what does this mean legally, and what precedent does it set on the global stage? Well, joining me on the line from Pretoria to discuss this is Professor André Thomashausen, Professor Emeritus of International Law and former Director of the Institute of Foreign and Comparative Law at UNISA. Professor, thank you so much for your time. From a legal standpoint, how serious is this bill and how likely is it to succeed in US and international courts?
Hello, Paula, and good afternoon to the listeners. Indeed, it is a further twist. There's like a ratchet that is slowly being tightened, and this is a further very serious risk because the congressman who tabled this draft legislation, Greg Stube from Florida, is someone very closely aligned with Mark Rubio, the foreign minister of the United States, they call him Secretary of State. And this is not just a fluke of somebody who's marginal and hardly ever noticed. The bill is a reaction to, I think, one of the most outrageous events after 7th of October, right on the 8th of October, the next day. South African Foreign Minister Pandor, known to be a convert to Islam and quite radical about it, showed up in Tehran and was photographed with the Ayatollah and many other dignitaries, and spent the whole day there and was nothing but smiling and congratulating Iran and making her distasteful reasonings that Israel had it coming, that Israel got what it deserved. So this is, of course, these things take their time, but they sink in, and many, many other
do it in the
unknown.
Sorry, we just seem to be losing you. If while I ask you the next question, you could just perhaps move to somewhere where the connection is just slightly better. The bill accuses South Africa of lawfare, I put that in inverted commas, using international law not for justice, but for political gain. Does this accusation hold legal weight in your opinion?
Well, definitely. The term lawfare is actually a very good new term to signal, to characterize a legal action that is opportunistic, that is not actually pursued for some valid pursuit of justice, but it is pursued to make a certain political gain, to pursue a certain political agenda. And the entire law case, the institution of that action in the International Criminal Court, in the International Court of Justice, showed it, because it happened over the last days of the year, over December, over the Christmas vacation, and notifications by Israel to propose meetings between the Directors General of Foreign Affairs to discuss the opinion, to discuss the accusation of genocide. All those were deliberately tortured. They were deliberately frustrated, and South Africa pushed ahead with entering the phase of litigation with its very, very high publicity effect, with its defamatory effect. Because, of course, it is very different if you accuse any country of genocide and to accuse Israel, which was born out of the only genocide known and documented in history, accused of all countries Israel of genocide, highly defamatory, and definitely law warfare, and all the opportunities that South Africa would have had to reconsider this in support of negotiations. They do have a close and working relation with the Hamas leadership, and of course with the Iranian leadership, and also with the Russian leadership, who are the main supporters of Iran these days. They could have used that leverage to help in the negotiation process. Instead, they kept insisting on asking for further interim orders, international Court of Justice further interim orders that would further drive this accusation of genocide. It is a bit of a very bad and simple strategy that cheap divorce attorneys will pursue. Even when there's no indication of any abuse, they will ask the court to issue an order that the husband may not abuse the wife any further. And this will, of course, tarnish the standing of the one party in those proceedings. And this is what's happening here, and I agree, it is lawfare. And South Africa, strangely, with the threat of increased tariffs on all its products going to America, has not even understood the opportunity of maybe negotiating itself out of increased tariffs by offering to scale down this lawfare, or to maybe offer to withdraw the entire case in the International Court of Justice in return for some reasonable arrangements, for compromises that might end the conflict in Gaza.
Professor, do you think that South African leaders could really face asset freezes or travel bans under US law? And what are the legal mechanisms that allow another country to do that?
Well, definitely. And there have been precedents that the US will, once they have you in your sights, in their sights, they will target the individuals that they hold responsible for what is happening, and that they find are a serious obstacle to American policy and American interests. And President Trump, in his letter to President Ramaphosa two days ago about the tariffs, said that South Africa's conduct in international relations, especially now at the last BRICS summit in Rio de Janeiro, is beginning to threaten American security. That's where it starts to touch on a really serious issue, because we can easily see and understand that once American security is threatened, America will get very serious. And this could seriously harm the financial interests and the assets that many, many leading ANC figures have chosen to place in the United States. For instance, the brother-in-law of President Ramaphosa, Mr. Motsepe, is known to be one of the largest horse breeders in America, racehorse breeders, and he has vast assets in America. If they were frozen, exert a lot of internal pressure on the ANC decision-making.
Professor, we have 1 minute before we have to go to the news, but I do want to ask you, the bill references financial ties with Iran and alleged funding of the ANC. If proven, would that constitute a violation of international sanctions law?
Absolutely. And there is a long history to this. The investment of South Africa's second largest mobile phone operator, MTN, in Iran, in return for, we still don't quite know what, but what used to be discussed and mentioned, it was in return for the sharing of nuclear weapons technologies that South Africa had developed and that Iran was very keen to acquire. And there is a court case in progress where the competing cell phone operator, Turkcell, is suing MTN for large amounts of damages. So if the United States decide to make public what they know, information that they have gathered, it would exert considerable pressure on South Africa. Unfortunately, it might have an effect that nobody would like to see, which is to drive South Africa further into the alliance with China and with Russia and with Iran, and to join that grouping in international relations that is trying to defy the United States and Europe.
Thank you, Professor Thomas Hazen. As legal and political worlds collide over this bill, your insights remind us just how high the stakes are, not only for South Africa, but also for Israel and for the future of international law.